It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie and Andy Iannocco are here, and we have lots to talk about. Of course, we're going to continue talking about rumors about the new iPhone. We're only weeks away from an Apple announcement, we think. Also, a hacker has announced he's been able to crack the encryption of the secure enclave processor in iOS. What does that mean? Well, we'll find out next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 572, recorded Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017. Reverse Polish notation. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code MACBREAK to save 20% off any order. And by Capterra. Capterra is a free, easy-to-use software comparison site with over 400 categories of business software to choose from and thousands of reviews from actual software users like you. Visit capterra.com/MACBREAK today. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. The Mac Break Weekly team assemble. Mr. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times joining us from Eclipse headquarters. In Massachusetts.
A little bit too bright up there for me today. I wish we were still in Eclipse.
Well, that fireball was gone for a while. I don't know what happened. Also with us, Renee Ritchie from Montreal, where they couldn't see anything.
I was eclipsed, Leo.
You were eclipsed.
I like seeing the data. Like, I like seeing the traffic patterns of all the people trying to get there, and then like the temperature graph of what it changed during the eclipse.
How
all
much
that
did
I find
it change?
Like the metadata.
It changed a lot, right? Like,
yeah.
Somebody, I saw one report 5 degrees, and another one said 20 degrees. I guess it depends where you were.
Keep it there. We'll fix our weather.
Some of our team was up there. Our editor, Anthony Nielsen, our IT guy, Russell Tammany, my studio manager, Jammer B, John Slanina, were there. Anthony has, everybody's working on posting their pictures, but Anthony posted this little video from, they were up in Oregon, Mitchell, Oregon, sitting in a field. There's Anthony and Russell and Shannon Morse from Tech Thing. And watch, this is a time lapse, so it's going to get he's pointing his camera the wrong way through the totality as it gets darker. And listen to the crowds, because there's other people around, I guess. And as it gets darker and darker.
Wow!
They're getting more and more excited.
Oh my God.
That's pretty cool.
Someone's blotting out the sun, Leo.
Oh, crap.
That's pretty neat. And then there's also a picture. Russell says, I'm still processing my shots. Let me see if I can find this one. But he posted a picture. He took his very fancy Sony A9 camera and a hugely expensive lens. And you could see in the viewfinder there that he's getting a very nice image. So I look forward to seeing his pictures of the eclipse. I hope you all enjoyed.
Was this a Lex Luthor plan? Did Superman have to save us? I'm very confused.
I love the guy who posted on Facebook the day before. You know, there seems to be consensus among scientists that there will be an eclipse, but can you really trust scientists? And maybe they're wrong, and you know, anyway.
Well, when you say stuff like that, you start to disprove evolution, so you never know.
It only begins with the eclipse. We don't have much to say this week, do we?
I mean, there's stuff. There's things, Leo.
There's things.
There's like, stuff.
But not much we can, stuff.
Never stopped
That's
us
never
before,
stopped us
it?
Before.
Yes. I guess we should kick things off with, do we have any idea when Apple's going to do an event? Have there been any clues at all?
September.
But it could be October, right? I mean, for a while there were rumors that we're going to be delayed with this.
Now there are a lot Now there are a lot of people that are saying that the if there is a super splendiferous iPhone 8 coming out, that that might not ship at the same time as the iPhone 7s, the updated iPhone 7. So you never know. Maybe they'll have like a second mini event just to make that seem so special. Or
the Wall Street people would lose it if Apple didn't have an event. Like, it's not really, it's not reality. It's perception management.
That's an interesting
point. And if they
didn't
have a September event, there would just be panic up and down Wall Street. And there would be so many headlines, Leo, that I would just fall down.
But nobody, there's no guarantee. Apple's moved events before. They had traditionally had a September and October event. They stopped doing that. But the first iPhone was announced in January and shipped in June. So,
yeah, but that was that was back in
it was
back
10
when,
years ago.
You know, a wig was president. So, I mean, Renee is right. The amount of earth that Apple is willing to move to make sure that the iPhone hits a September launch date is they'll move heaven and earth. The Eclipse could have been just a test run for what they need to do to make sure that they get 3D touch working on the new screen technology. So don't I think you can count on an event in September. Whether or not there's a second iPhone event later on is totally new territory, because we've never had a situation where we're going to where they're kind of forking the iPhone. If they do go together with this rumored idea of a super splendiferous iPhone. So,
yeah.
So we do have precedent. I mean, like 2 years, it was 2 years ago where they did a mega event and they had the iPhones because everything sort of, nothing was ready earlier. So they had the iPhones, they had the first iPad Pro, they had the new Apple TV, and the list just went on and on. I mean, the demo rooms just went on and on. And not everything came out at once. The iPhones came out when they usually did, and then the iPad came out. I think the Apple TV came out, and then the iPads came out, and it was like 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. So there's nothing to stop them having a September event and just saying this will be available in limited quantities in October or November or whatever.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a long list of things that are stacked up. We've got iPhone 7S. They're thinking about a simple bump on the iPhone 7. We're thinking another phone called the iPhone 8 or the super splendiferous iPhone. So that's call that a second product line. We've got rumors of an updated Apple Watch. That's a third product. We have good rumors about a updated version of the Apple TV that does at least HDR. So that's five. They have the HomePod, which they at least want to show functioning. So that's number six. They might want to show off to make sure people remember that the iMac is still a pressing concern. So that's seven. And that's
isn't the iMac systems.
Isn't the iMac Pro supposed to come out this year, right?
Yeah, this year, but I feel like we're going to see December 28th, 29th, 30th.
And there'll be five of them. There'll be five of them on the 29th.
Well, there's precedent. The Mac Pro, last Mac Pro was announced, but didn't really come into people's hands until January, but it was announced roughly that.
They ship five. I mean, that's all you need. You ship five.
You're right, Andy. I mean, that's at least seven things they could talk about. And that's not even including software.
And the software they've been pushing out so much now. Like, they just put out a whole bunch of videos for iOS 11 that they don't usually do, and it feels like they want to get past that part of the conversation so they can dive into that deep hardware pile.
Well, not only that, but it feels like there's stuff that they can't show off until they show off the hardware. So people already know about how the new file launcher is going to work. People already know about how the new dock works. So may as well get those videos finished and shipped out so that in September or October, whenever they're going to do this, they can now talk about, well, here's how to align the magnets on your desk so that the new iPad does hover mode correctly without falling off the table.
They are. They did just put out developer beta 7, right, of iOS 11, and the public beta is now up to 6. I was surprised to get an update so quickly after 5 came out. So
they've been doing it really fast.
They've been hustling. Which kind of does indicate that we're close to the release date. I hope they don't do what did you see what Google did yesterday?
Oreo?
Yeah. Google says on, I think, Thursday or Friday of last week, we're going to have an event. We went right after the Eclipse, we're going to have an event and announcing Android O. And so we all hands on deck we're going to live stream it. So we arranged to broadcast as we do. I was going to be here, and then I realized I had already a prior engagement to do a radio show in San Francisco. I tried to get out of that, couldn't. But we got Jason and Florence Ion came in, and it was It was this. It was, countdown. There was nobody on stage. There was a stage out in a park in New York City where people were watching the eclipse. There's a lot of smoke. It opens up and there's a robot cookie, an Oreo.
It's a superhero, Leo.
Really, the only announcement was the O stands for Oreo. And God, if Apple did this, imagine how pissed off people would be.
It's over. Apple's doomed.
That was it. I mean, that's it. That's all they did. Nobody said anything even. And I feel bad for Jason and Florence who had to come in and cover this non-event.
But we
fell for it. I was thinking oatmeal cookie because I didn't think they wanted to do a brand name again, but they apparently did. So, but that's off the point. Who cares about Android? We're talking about iOS here. We're talking iPhone. A lot of excitement about. I'm excited about the new iPhone. And I have to say, there have been points in the last few years where I swear I'm not buying another iPhone. Darn it! And this
the job, Leo, you have to.
Yeah. Well, I have to, and I want to, and this one's going to be expensive, we think, right over maybe.
Did you see those videos that they found in the latest firmware where it had almost like WebOS-style card gestures? I was so excited. I don't know if they're going to do them or not, but that those videos were very appealing to me.
Well, let me see if I can find those. This was for iOS 11 and an iPhone?
Yeah, and those might have been buried, so they might have been experiments that they tried and decided not to go with, or they might
but
be something.
But you wouldn't put that in the firmware.
I mean, I normally yell, Leo, but since that HomePod leak, nothing is beyond me anymore.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but the thing is, you're not going to put something in the firmware that you're not going to, I mean, that's just wasting space.
Yeah. Or somebody like, well, they destroyed my idea and I want to get publicity on it. So yeah. I'm sneaking those back into the package.
Here are the Twitter videos from Guillermo Rambo. Yeah. So this is a gesture.
Right, so you're limited in the amount of gestures, bevel gestures you can do. Bezel gestures. You have basically one for each side, which they're already using all those. So yeah. If they put something else at the bottom, you have to move Control Center to the top, and that's what that showed. It showed Control Center added to Notification Center in the top gesture.
Well, let me play it again. So now that I understand, so I pull down the screen, scroll left
for your widgets,
right for the widgets,
Control Center
or the Control Center rather, and then I scroll up for settings, which is kind of nice.
Well, he was on settings already.
Let's look at the other video then. Okay. So
this one will show you why they did that.
He says this is also interesting. So he's now okay. Oh, whoa. Okay. Okay. Let's get this straight. So he's looking at Instagram or something. He now swipes up from the bottom with his thumb and he gets recents, right?
I've loved that ever since WebOS.
The app switcher. And then on the this is interesting.
Well, so, okay, that would make sense if you're getting rid of the home button. Remember, that's how you get to the app switcher is you double tap on the home launcher. So perhaps perhaps that would support the idea that there's not going to be a clicky home button. That's going to be completely virtual or just eliminated entirely.
And then there's a Control Center on the right.
Yeah, the card.
Like a mini dock.
I presume you could swipe that.
Is that just the left edge of that card?
I would guess that's the left edge of that
it's
card.
It's coming in, so like it looks like it's being added to the stack at the end in case you want to quickly get to Control Center.
And you could swipe over if you wanted more.
Maybe I see cards populating in from the left as well.
Yeah, the left is the other.
So I think the left is the standard ones.
Right.
The left is your hierarchy of recent.
Okay. So these have to be in there. These solve the problem, right? That you have of you don't have a home button anymore.
Yeah, although it's certainly interesting.
Although it's weird that look at the aspect ratio of that screen. There's room at the bottom there for a physical home button. I would expect to have seen that on something where they made the screen larger or done something to justify. Here's why we got rid of that.
That's because Guillermo doesn't have the new iPhone. He just has the software.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Guillermo needs the new iPhone to really make this thing. If you take away the home button, you have more screen real estate. That's the reason to take away the home button. But I'm a little worried because I still find myself in apps where the only thing I can find to do to get out of a particular screen is go back home.
It's your escape hatch.
Yeah. What do we do if we don't have that?
If the swipe up from the bottom is now simply the home button, essentially, that does the same action, that people get used to it. Also, it solves the problem that I was struggling with was, how do you deal with somebody who has who can't see the screen? How can that person then find it? It's very good to have a physical clicky button or something with a physical bump on it so that you can orient it in your hand and find it in your hand correctly. That might mitigate that by simply saying, if you can't get a good look at the phone, you just know that swipe up from the bottom. Although now you run into the problem of how do I make sure that I'm holding it correctly with the top side up in my hand just by feel. So,
you know, this is a tough thing for these kinds of interfaces. And Microsoft learned at their peril that having kind of these hidden gestures really confuses people. With Windows 8 and 8.1, they hid a lot of stuff in corners and things, and you were just supposed to somehow know.
BBOS as well. Do you remember that? Like, you had to almost do incantations to bring up the hub and to do other. And that's the danger, is that you only have a very small amount of gross gestures that are easily understandable. Basically, the eight corners of the device, and really only four if you want them to be super easy to use. And after that, you're drawing patterns on the screen, and it feels almost like the new dock and multitasking. I feel like I'm dealing cards when I'm using it. But when you see people use it for the first time, it's like, how do I hold this to put it on the side? How do I hold it to overlay it? How do I set up the two apps this way? And there's a much steeper learning curve for those kinds of gestures.
I mean, it's just the way it is. It's tough because you don't have a lot of affordances. You have to make it work. Google is apparently, HTC's done this with their HTC U11, and Google is apparently going to adopt it for a Pixel, a squeeze gesture.
Yes.
Where you squeeze the phone, and I guess that's going to be the Google Assistant. I feel like there needs to be something like that. If you're going to take away the home button, there needs to be some gesture that's always available and somewhat intuitive that does the home button, doesn't there?
There's a big rumor that both Apple and Google and other manufacturers really want to get rid of every hardware button and every port if they can, because they consider those areas of hardware failure. And the more they can virtualize, the more reliable all of their devices will be. And Google's apparently getting there faster with
the Ironically, console. No user ever has said that, but...
Well, remember in China, there was that story about how they would put on the virtual home button because they were paranoid about the real home button breaking.
Well, Google's always had, or often had, both an on-screen home button and a physical home button in some of their some phones, like the Samsung. Yeah. Although rumor is, and we'll find out tomorrow, the Note 8 is going to be announced tomorrow, that also Samsung is going to eliminate its physical home button. I mean, you have to if you want more screen real estate, and I think this is something users have converged on. More screen real estate is something we all want, yes?
Maybe. It really depends on the user. I think that's still a premium phone sort of feature. We're seeing a lot of really great things happening now in the $300 to $400 space, and those phones are selling really well, even though they just simply have a very large screen and they also have a certain amount of bezel. For now, I think that deleting bezel and increasing screen size is right now more of a fashion thing than a practical thing. It does have practical impact in that, again, bigger screen without making a bigger phone. But realize that every single company that makes a really big phone also makes a more moderate-sized phone, because not everybody wants anything that's even that size. So I think it remains to be seen whether or not this is how much this is fashion and how much this is the direction that people want to go with their phones.
Yeah. So will the Apple event be held at the new Apple Park? We've been talking about that. I want to go.
I'd love it to be. I'd really enjoy it. I don't know if they're ready for us yet, Leo.
Well, there's new drone footage. This came out after our show last week. The latest 4K Apple drone tour. And let's see if we can see how much progress.
Amazing to think of the older drone footage when it was barely assembled and now looking at it.
I know. It's almost done. I mean, the landscaping is almost done. You can see how it really is beautiful. They call it Apple Park, and it's starting to look more and more park-like. That, by the way, is the Steve Jobs Theater we're looking at in the distance. And I think it's conceivable that this could be ready to go in a week or two. That's the road leading to it, the curvy road there, right? And while there's still stuff, you know, happening, it's drivable. It's not painted.
Particularly if the invitation says we're going to reconnoiter at a Ramada Inn parking lot.
Oh, and bus you in. Yeah.
In San Jose and bus you in there.
Yeah.
Bring your hard hat.
But I'm not sure that they want to deal with even that. Something is going to have to be the first event at the new Apple campus. It's going to happen eventually.
I'm sure they wanted to do it for the 10th anniversary iPhone. I mean, what
did you see?
Well, but also, is this the company that would want you to drive past a road that hasn't been landscaped, hasn't been finished, that looks like it's still got some planting to do, that still has you can look across the campus and still see employees beating their heads against their desks because they miss their cubicles. They don't like being in within view of everybody.
And I also heard, I don't know if this is reliable or if this will change, but I've heard that they're really not that that precious about the 10th anniversary thing, that it's 10th anniversary, great, whatever, here's what's next. It's not one of those things that they're going to be focusing
on. Well, if that's the case, then they definitely won't have it here, because this is not, I mean, as close as they are, it's not 3 weeks.
I will make one prediction. I think that wherever the next event is, and maybe it's not going to be on the Apple campus, you're going to see 5 to maybe 8 journalists come up with really great pictures of the Apple campus.
Right.
7 days after that.
Right. Why 7 days?
I'm just pulling a number out. I think there's
somebody will visit.
I think that over the 2 or 3 days, they know that people are going to be there. They're going to extend invitations to certain very, very select people. They're going to give them each a personal tour, and then Mashable on Wednesday after that event are going to have a photo spread and conversations with whomever was leading them on the tours. I don't believe it's going to be a group thing, but I would be surprised if Apple didn't take advantage of that.
The world has changed in some interesting ways. David Pogue brought together the 4 journalists, 4, count them, 4, who got the iPhone in 2007 before anybody else did.
And 3 of them were Walt Mossberg.
Yeah. Walt Mossberg, David from the Wall Street Journal, David Pogue from the New York Times, Ed Baig of USA Today, and Stephen Levy of Newsweek. Of those 4, only 1 is still at his publication. I think Ed Baig's still at the USA Today. And I wouldn't say any of those 4 are likely to get a pre-release of any iPhone that comes out. Although Stephen Levy did get the first article about Apple Park in Wired magazine.
Did you see Johnny Ive refuting the tree story? That was hilarious.
No. So which tree story?
There was a story that Johnny Ive was just basically pillaging every tree in San Francisco.
There were no trees
to
be had. Yeah.
Yeah. That he was like strip mining California of trees. And he said, that's ridiculous. This has been meticulously planned for years. One does not simply acquire this many trees on the spur of the moment. It's not like I decided 2 weeks ago, oh no, I need trees.
I need trees. And you know what? That's completely right.
Aren't those people flattering themselves to think that their city trees are up to Apple's standards? I don't think so.
Well, but I have to say, looking at that video, those are the plantings look very nice. The trees particularly look very mature, and all you have to do is get whatever else is going to, they're still in dirt. Although I have to say, those look like mostly what, pines and redwoods, right? You can't plant anything under a redwood. The needles are so acidic that everything dies. All you'll have is pine needles under there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So if they do plant something under there, they're going to be replanting it on a frequent basis. Not that I'm they should have put an apple tree. Somebody said, you're right, mashed potato orange harem says, what about apple trees?
Or wasn't it an apricot orchard that Steve Jobs?
Prunes.
Yeah, prune.
Plum orchard, yeah.
Yeah.
That whole area was mostly prune trees.
Well, they would keep Apple employees regular as well. See, it's double.
In fact, the big mall near there is called the Prune Yard.
Wow.
Which is not, on the face of it, a very felicitous name for a mall. And in fact, they're not doing all that well. But, that's historic. It was what they're... Yeah, they don't want fruit trees. But I think fruit trees might have been a little bit nicer and certainly truer to Steve Jobs, who was, for many years, a fruititarian.
Yes.
All right. So, let's see. We've already said all the rumors. At this point, they've been so repeated that I think they're now truth. We'll be very surprised if it isn't, for instance, an OLED screen that reaches almost to the very edges of the front of the phone. We'll be very surprised if they haven't replaced Touch ID with face recognition. And if that face recognition, if they're going to do that, it has to work so well that it just knows practically it's just your presence.
Milliseconds.
Well, and it should work on a lot flat on the table, right? So at any point that you want to access your phone, it should be able to see your face and know it's you, and not, you wouldn't have to do anything. If it does that, it's almost magic.
It has like several cameras in it, like an infrared camera, a regular camera, a 3D sensing camera. It's almost,
it's going to have to for AR kit, right? That's the other thing. This is going to be the AR phone.
That's slightly so. Yeah. So, I mean, there'll be a camera that's also works really well with AR, both front and back. And they're doing some, I've seen some awesome developer demos that aren't out yet, but it's like they're the basic ones like IKEA that we've all seen, or the Star Wars chess that we've played. But there are other ones. I know you've seen similar demos, Leo, but these are done with AR kit where you're in the real world and you open a door and you walk into a virtual world and you walk back out the door. You're in the real world. You walk into the door again. Yeah. You're in a virtual world. And they're doing something so smart. They're doing all the tracking and the basic AR overhead on the CPU. Right. And that leaves the GPU completely open to developers for these huge textures and models and lighting effects. And it doesn't look totally real, but it doesn't look uncanny either. It's like a really good enough lighting, good enough textures, good enough models that it feels almost like a cartoon movie world.
What and you know, we've talked a lot about what kinds of applications. Here's one from ModiFace for a makeup demo. And now this is kind of like a Snapchat filter. She's doing a selfie, but she could pick her lipstick shade. And what's really different is how completely accurate, yep. I mean, much more so than a Snapchat demo, how completely accurate the lipstick is applied to her face. Now what's kind of confusing about this is it looks like you're actually in a store, and you are, except that there are displays of you. With different makeup on right there in the store. And actually, when she moves into it, you could see a little error there where she actually kind of confuses the AR kit.
And some of the apps are really honest, and they show you all the dots that they're continuously measuring to try to detect planes
it's
in your vicinity.
Yeah. This is different eyeshadow, different lipstick makeup. Here's another video. This is the virtual makeup counter. So You've all seen department store makeovers. She's walked up to a AR counter. Looks like a real counter in a store. Even the marble on the countertop matches the marble on the floor. It's loaded up with, I have to say, they look a little 2D makeup and pictures of her. She can do her own augmented reality makeover. But those products are very flat.
Yeah, they're not actual models. That's weird.
Yeah, but they don't need to be, I guess. I mean, it's an interesting demo, I guess, is the point. But what it proves is it's the answer to the question I've asked, which is what is the useful application of this? And that IKEA, yeah. And we can think of a few now.
Oh, I'm looking forward to more of those demos that don't just show you how it's going to help people sell things to me, and where it's going to help people. Like when the most interest, I didn't see it as a demo, but someone described it to me as you're at a concert or you're at an event with somebody, or you're at a concert or you're at an event and you want to know, hey, this looks like the sort of thing that Renee would be at. There are like 10,000 Pokemon people here in Boston. I wonder if Renee is in here, and I just simply activate my app, hold it up, and I will see like Renee's avatar and a pointer like way in the direction that I know the Boston Common is in. And I could just basically, because he has turned on this beacon feature, find him in a crowd, whether it's at a rock concert or whether it's at the beach or whatever. Just stuff like that is really going to sell this. The idea of, again, placing IKEA furniture in your living room, it's going to be nice, but I think that's going to be one of those apps that a million people download and then eight people actually buy things based on it. The other thing we kind of glossed over, I'm sure that the new iPhones cameras are going to be optimized to make sure they work really, really well with ARKit. But Apple's genius is that they're not doing it like Project Tango with Google, where you don't have to have a special phone. Developers are using whatever hardware they happen to have right now, and that works great. But the other thing is that I'm seeing a lot of demos like this once developers have created something that works great, and they're not apt to show. If whatever the current state of this makeup generating app is, they're going to show it off working fine. They're not going to show off, oh, and by the way, here are the 31 times during when we're trying to capture video from this demo that the makeup, the lips were a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. Or I'm not going to show you the footage we shot when it was someone who has thinner lips or thicker lips where it wasn't tracking it properly. We're seeing demos of things working. We're not seeing demos of things failing. So it's going to be, I'm really, really excited by every Every person I've spoken to about ARKit right now, all the demos I've seen and used so far about ARKit, but remember, it's still an unproven quantity until, let's say, 4 months after it's released, when we can't even judge it the first week that the new iOS is released. We're going to have to judge it after hundreds of thousands of copies of the software are out in public and developers can get feedback on what's working, what's tripping things up, give people a chance to do a rev or two of this app that they're making with ARKit to find out how well it works. I'm terribly excited about what I'm going to see in January or February.
I'm also excited about just like, imagine like you're commuting and you're in one of the Apple buses and you have your AirPods on and you have your iPad in front of you and you're bored because you've done this commute 100 times and suddenly there's this app, Jurassic Commute or whatever, and you press a button and your earpieces are going da-da-da-da-dum and you hear, welcome to Jurassic Commute, and suddenly, oh look, there's a Google bus.
Dinosaurs love the taste of Google. Pokemon Go.
No, it's just like everything changes. Everything changes because you're doing this mixed reality thing and suddenly you're watching an interactive simulation of dinosaurs rushing down the highway with you, and it makes your commute just a little bit better. People hate being bored. There's all sorts of things that we can apply this technology to.
Well, yeah, I mean, a million
medical
things.
Training.
A lot of people don't know that most of the land in Boston wasn't there until about 1870 something, 1880 something, when they just, because Boston was what is now Boston, was almost entirely marshland. The city of Boston was this tiny, it's described as a plum, just a plum attached to the mainland by one little land bridge that the British quickly took control of, and that's how they controlled people going in and out of Boston. All they had to do was pinch off this land bridge. And so after we got the British out, we thought, why don't we just sort of like dig dirt and rocks from elsewhere and just dump them in the marsh. And if we do that for enough decades, we will now have real estate that we can build on. And so I sometimes people ask me about that, and I'll give them links to photos where photos taken from Boston Common, where you see the ocean coming right up to Boston Common. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you see land. And then the next picture, you see the public garden that was built on that land. And then you see like one church just beyond the public garden. And then you start to see city blocks far and farther away as the coastline gets pushed farther and farther away. Wouldn't it be wonderful if anytime you go into a city like that, if you're especially a historic city like Philadelphia or Boston, you could just simply hold up your phone and just from any spot and say, well, here is what this looked like 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, 200 years ago. That's what I'm, as good as these demos are, as good as Apple's promotion of this is a prime example of letting the public find their own version of awesome in this feature. It's not going to be whatever Apple cooks into it. It's going to be a potential that developers see, and it's going to be a true testament to here's the crazy ones, the ones that just Apple would never have predicted in a million years anybody would use ARKit for this, and now they're trying to send this man or woman an offer package desperately because they need to bring this warped, twisted, wonderful, beautiful brain inside Cupertino.
That's the thing I'm most excited about, is that if you have someone now who is, let's say, an expert at historical modeling, they can just use our ARKit to make it a reality. They don't also have to go and build this entire AR tracking and rendering engine. They can do what they do well and let Apple handle the heavy lifting through the frameworks. And that just it opens all these different developers up to this opportunity.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I have a bunch of images of iPhone 8.
Uh-oh.
And we're going to play a game. I want you guys, if it looks right and you think it's true, you go ding, 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 ding. If you think it's bogus, you go, eh. Okay, we're going to play. I don't have a buzzer to give you. You just have to do it with your voice. We're going to play that game when we return in just a second. Our show today brought to you by The Tracker, a lovely little device that helps you find your most valued possessions. We all spend a lot of time looking for stuff we know we have, but we have misplaced. Keys for me is number one. Where are my keys? It's kind of the refrain every morning. Where are my keys? Wallet, number two. Well, it used to be. Now that I have the Tracker in both. Tracker is a Bluetooth device about the size of a quarter. Actually, I have the Tracker Bravo. Almost looks like a quarter. It's anodized aluminum, a little bit lighter. Actually, a lot lighter. And then now they have the Tracker Pixel, which is even smaller and lighter. And that has LEDs on it and a ring. And that's handy because if you leave your key, like your keys fell under the couch, the lights really help you find it. Plus the loud noise that comes out of it. You can trigger that noise from your phone. You pair it to your phone via Bluetooth. There's a button on the Tracker you push if you lose your phone. the tracker goes, you press that button and the tracker makes the phone, even if it's silenced, go, hey, I'm over here. Well, or plays a song or whatever you choose. It also has the best crowdsourced network in the world, the largest crowd location network in the world with more than 4.5 million trackers out there. No matter where your device is, when somebody running the tracker software walks by it, it'll ping your map and you'll see where your thing is, even if somebody's taken it and moved it. I put trackers on my bicycle, so if somebody steals my bike, I can find out where it is. Put it in your luggage. You never lose, especially hand luggage, ever again. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you've got nothing to lose. Get it? Keys, wallets, even your car and your pets. It's kind of like Find My iPhone for everything you own. The Tracker and the all-new Tracker Pixel. Go there right now. Check it out. TheTracker.com. TheTracker.com. Load up your cart with all the devices you want and take 20% off that order with the promo code MacBreak. Tell your friends, too. 20% off any order with the offer code MacBreak at thetracker.com. TheTracker. There are over 5 million devices shipped now, so I should update that. Say 5 million. 5 million.
5.
5 million. All right, you ready to play our little game? The bunch of leaks on Slash Leaks from a guy named... the leak, I don't know, they're different names, the leaker. This one has a trust score quite high. This is the iPhone 8 display panel. Before you or ding, 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 I'll show you some other images. I think this looks a little fakey fake. This would be easy to fake, wouldn't it? What do you think?
A lot of manufacturers, I don't know how easy it would be.
Also, there are a couple of Android phones that are using that style, believe it or not, so... I'm unwilling to commit at this juncture.
it is close to what iPhone 8 looks like, from my understanding. I don't know if those are actual panels or not, but
yeah. It's what I'm expecting.
This from Leak Spinner is a camera and some sort
Apple Watch band
sensing module. No, it's not. You think everything's an Apple Watch band.
I know. I was about to buy it, Leo.
Is it the 3D sensing module from an iPhone 8? Leak Spinner is 78% accurate.
That's beyond my expertise, sadly.
Yeah.
I was hoping for a lot of funny sounds on this one. All right, all right, all right. How about the OLED display assembly with some...
Yeah, it's the same one.
Same one. They just glued some stuff on it. Mm. With the lightning and power flex cables.
Oh. It's broadly compatible with what I understand the phone looks like.
Somebody's got a bell. Nice, Andy.
Well, I'm just going to say that tabletop, that looks like a sort of wood grain that Johnny Ive would approve to the Apple Store. So definitely on
ding,
that
ding,
wood
ding,
grain.
Ding, 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 ding. All right. You see the futility of all this. How about the A11?
Well, I mean, it clearly says A11 on it.
That's almost impossible to
It's a blurry shot of an A11. It could be a piece of cardboard. Who knows what that is? Let's see. The wireless charging accessory.
Well, I mean.
Well.
It could be a
pacemaker. Consumers won't see that part of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, it's not inconceivable that these things are leaking out because we are probably in production right now.
Actually, right? what we could do, the giveaway would be if we take a look at that surface and see that even though the user is never going to see it, that it's been painted just as well as the side of the iPhone that people will see.
All right, this I don't trust at all. Side-by-side images of...
I'm guessing no.
Although all the mock-ups I've seen of the next generation iPhone have had the vertical camera slot as opposed to the horizontal camera slot. That seems a fakey fake, this one. But who knows? Who knows? Hands on the iPhone. Oh, we already saw that one. Let's see. This is all from Slash Leaks. They have some good stuff. Here's a
blush gold.
Yeah. Blush gold, copper gold.
Why are they not willing to say bronze? That's clearly what we would call bronze before.
Rose gold was kind of like pink, but they didn't say pink.
Well, rose. There was such a thing as rose gold. It has to be sort of a pinkish. Right.
It's a gold.
Bronze, though, is bronze. We know what bronze is. Yeah. We named an entire age after bronze. People have been killed with bronze tools. They are the last thing they saw was
with bronze cream.
Here are the three. This is the copper, gold. You know, we're seeing enough of these.
Just should have bronze, gold.
Bronze, gold.
Hey, Tung Hao.
Jet black. And again, look at the sensor. But I should point out, there is a brisk market for fake iPhones in China. I get them every year. And these could easily be not actual iPhones, but the mock-ups or the fakes that somebody's making in, you know, to sell. See, these don't match. Now they're all vertical. But I guess, well, maybe these are all the new iPhone in bronze, gold, black. But this is kind of... anybody can make that.
It's really hard to go. We're almost at the last week of August right now. This is the time at which if we're ever expecting to see genuine unauthorized photos in advance, this is the time we would see it, because you just can't, too many people are in on it at this point.
Now,
you can't trust
just remember,
everybody.
It's like reading the script of the next Star Wars movie. If you look at all these and then you go to the event and you say boring, it's because you looked at all these.
Right.
Or it's like, or I consider it like I'm gonna BitTorrent an episode of Game of Thrones that's going to air in 5 days. It's like, okay, I mean, if I, what's the harm in waiting 5 days to see it easy and
without finished effects?
Right.
Yeah. It's
this. I'm gonna say, ding 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 ding. This is an X-ray. Yeah, thank you, Andy. This is a picture of a Windows XP screen, so that I give it some credibility just for that.
Yeah, it's got to be using XP.
Right? This is their...
explain how these photos are being leaked out.
And by the way, I should point out that the rounded corner blob in the back of this X-ray looks a lot like that wireless charging module we saw earlier. So this looks pretty credible. This is a purportedly an X-ray picture of... the iPhone.
It's from an iPhone that accidentally swallowed a thumbtack, and they were worried that it would burst the internals.
But this is part of the test stage, the EVT stage, right? Is that they?
There was a video this morning on Reddit where someone was testing the Apple logo being a fingerprint reader on the back of an iPhone 8, and people were losing their minds.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
It's a silly season, Leo.
This is that time of year. Let's talk a little bit about that fingerprint reader. Do we have, and let me see if we have any rumors. That's dopey. I think it's gone. You guys agree? It's going to be gone. I think it's going to be gone in the next one. I think you can deal with it.
I think there's going to be at least a iPhone that doesn't have it.
Yeah. Yes.
Or it could have under the screen fingerprint technology that's just not working consistently enough for them to talk about it, and it gets enabled in a future update.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know how far along they got with it.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if it were something that I'd be surprised if the sensor were there, but the firmware or the software isn't ready yet. And so they leave it disabled until there's a surprise update. I'd be more inclined to think that they've got plan A and plan B. And as soon as the incredibly difficult and incredibly revolutionary plan A didn't prove to be completely reliable, they went immediately to plan B. I'm not sure that they would do it that way. It's not as easy as like implementing a new version of Bluetooth. I have a hard time believing that would work, but again, we're all just guessing at this point.
Yep.
What happens?
Face ID all the time.
Do you have iOS 11 on your phone yet, either of you?
Yes.
I put it on my iPad Pro, and by the way, it works great in the beta 6.
Since WWDC, Leo. Nice. I mean, I got a reputation to maintain.
So, when you tap your home button 5 times,
yes,
it says, "Would you like me to call 911?" Right?
I can do it right now.
Yeah, that's the emergency, and that, by the way, that's a nice feature.
Yes, and this way.
Yeah, and then it disables Touch ID.
Yeah,
and that's not a bug.
That is completely intentional.
Why is that intentional?
Because they wanted them previously, there are times now, and people were very quick to call it a cop button, but that's not it at all. There are times now when you're going to be in a situation where you want to disable biometrics because, let's say, you're walking down a dark alley, or you're crossing a border into a region that you don't think is safe, or you know, you have an encounter at night and you don't necessarily trust the person you're falling asleep next to. And you want to make sure that people can't access your phone biometrically. And previously you had to reboot it, which is a little bit cumbersome. This just very quickly lets you put it into a secure state. And it's really well thought out too. Like if you actually go through with the SOS message, it doesn't disable Touch ID. It just disables it long enough for that screen to come up and make sure that
you're... By the way, it's the power button, not the home button, right? I misspoke.
The power button, yeah. I misspoke. The power button.
So don't be tapping your home button five times hoping something's going to happen. That actually just launches accessibility. So five times on the home button, which is pretty imperceptible. And then if law enforcement says, can you unlock your phone? You say, no. You have to get the password out of me. And the presumption is that, at least in the U.S., the password is protected in a way that the fingerprint is not. Courts have long held that you can... Well, you get fingerprinted when you get arrested. That the police can take your fingerprint. But
how sad is it that many of us are more concerned about law enforcement privacy invasions than we are about criminal behavior?
I think it's kind of bogus, to be honest with you. I don't think it happens very often at all. We were all worried about this, that this somehow, this would happen. You enter the United States a lot. What kind of treatment do you get by customs?
I use Nexus, so in order to have an easier transit between the two, I voluntarily gave both retina scans and fingerprint scans. So going into the U.S., they want fingerprints, and coming back into Canada, they want a retina scan.
And you've never been hassled otherwise.
I mean, it depends. There are times when there's heightened security, and then they ask you a lot more questions, or they disable the Nexus and they make you go through the regular way.
But have they ever asked you for your phone?
No.
Have they ever asked you for social network passwords or
No.
I just don't think that happens very often.
I'm super light. Going in and out for a day with no bags.
Not to people like us. It doesn't happen very often to people like us.
Actually,
a white guy named Rene Ritchie is not liable to be hassled by...
I don't know. He looks kind of dangerous. And not carrying bags to me seems like you're more dangerous.
Well, no. So I did. I had this for a while when I was transiting. They asked me what you do for a living, and previously I was in web development, and that would trigger every time I get moved into another room and interrogated because they thought I was going to work illegally in the U.S.
Oh, they were more worried about that. Yeah,
absolutely. But and especially if I didn't shave, they were just like, "Okay, hippie, get over there and tell."
Oh,
them
I had
really
that problem going into Canada because if they think you're going to make money into Canada, same problem. They don't want you to do that. So what I was always told is don't tell them you're making any money. you're making a television appearance for free. But if I said I am going to go up there as a paid host, it was problematic. I actually had to get a letter and a visa.
Why can't they hire a Canadian host?
Precisely.
And so what people in the tech industry, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this, people in the tech industry in Canada have learned to do is say that you're going down there to train your American replacement. And then they're super happy to let you in.
Okay, good to know.
I wish I was joking.
I was told also never say you're a journalist, but I don't. I always say I'm a journalist. That's okay. I'm going to celebrate it. All right, we've got a big question here, and we talked a little bit about it on iOS today. I bet you Steve Gibson will talk a little bit about it on Security Now later in the day. You know where I'm going with this. We're going to take a little break and then talk about the hacker who says, I have decrypted Apple's secure enclave. Is that problematic? And meanwhile, let's watch an ad from Volvo. I don't know why this is playing on my screen. Thank you.
Oh, Leo, I just lost electricity, but I have about 45 minutes of backup.
You're kidding.
We're having a major storm here, and everything went out, but I have about 45 minutes of...
All right. We're going to move fast here because we need to have Renee's comment on this. Our show... Yikes. Thank you. You have big battery backup if you can get 45 minutes.
I have four of them. Yeah.
Wow. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. So many times people say, you're the tech guy, you're a geek, you should know. I have a medical office. What's the best software? And I go, I don't know. I'm a web designer. What's the best? I don't know. Now I have somewhere I can send them. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com. Capterra is a totally free software comparison site for business software. And I don't care what business, any business. Are you running a church, a construction site? Are you doing customer relationship management or e-commerce? Do you need help with your help desk? Or do you want to learn how to run a learning management system? Maybe you're a maintenance worker and you just can't maintain your software. If you go right now to capterra.com/MacBreak, you will find 400 categories of business software to choose from. In almost every category, hundreds of apps and the information you need to choose the right one. Let's say I need maintenance management. I don't even know what maintenance management is. But let's say I need it. Go show my screen. Here you go. So I just click that category. Now, of course, immediately I get, look at all these apps. Somebody knows what maintenance management is. There's hundreds of apps. But that's each entry has a description and so forth. But that's not, let's make it a little easier. Let's narrow it down. Let's say we only want to see, by the way, there's more than 200,000 reviews by real users on this site. So we're going to narrow it down to only the apps that have four or more stars. And how many users? Well, there's only two of us in the department to nine of us or whatever. You pick the number of users. Do you want this to be web-based or do you want it to be installed in your hard drive? Let's run a web-based one. That's easy. What do you need? Key and lock management? Sure. Planning calendar? Yeah. Preventative maintenance calendar? Purchasing? Scheduling? Click the features you want. Press the filter button. And now you've narrowed it down to just those apps that do exactly what you want. Take a look at them. Click the add to compare button to add up to four of them to a comparison chart. And now you can really drill down and find just, oh, how did you hear about it? Oh, on a podcast. Oh, Mac Break. That's what you should do if they ask you. That's all we ask. It's free in every other respect. So look, I've got a comparison chart that says, you know, exactly how much it costs, what it's, you know, what it runs on, what its features are, screenshots. But here's the thing that's most useful, customer reviews and ratings. You're going to love this. There's no reason to Google it, to ask somebody. Just go to Capterra.com/MacBreak. This is the smartest way to find business software. Millions of people use Capterra every month. And I'm going to emphasize this. Not only is it free, you don't give them your email address. You don't have to sign up. It's just a directory of great software with great reviews by people just like you. Capterra, if you're looking for business software, Capterra.com/MacBreak. And if the little pop-up comes up as it did for me, and they say, well, how'd you hear about us? You say podcast and MacBreak, right? Right.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Renee Ritchie, power almost out. Let's see if we can get this in under
it's
the wire.
It's come on and off again twice so far, so my fingers are crossed.
Well, it's good you have, it's actually really good you have.
UPCs, yeah.
UPC. Guy named Zirib has released what he claims to be the decryption key for Apple's secure enclave.
So Apple's got a secure encryption processor, a SEP, and this isn't the key for the SEP. This is the key for the obfuscation layer around the SEP. And the way I try to describe it is, if you imagine Apple has this bank vault, they've got a black curtain in front of it so that you can't tell what kind of vault it is. And that makes it just a little bit harder. There's always security through obscurity is generally derided, but it's part of a good defense in depth, which means you have multiple layers to your security. And one of the layers they had was this obfuscation, this wrapper around it that made it impossible for anyone to see what was going on in the SEP and to start poking around in it. And he found the key to that. So he's been able to pull off this curtain, for example, and now you can see the actual SEP. None of the security is all still there. No user data was compromised. As far as we know, no one's breached it. It's just now he and, you know, White Hat and Black Hat hackers alike can actually see what the SEP is.
Well, but they can see the firmware too, right? That means they can start to bang
they can
on it.
They can hack on it, yeah. Before it was obfuscated.
So it was obfuscated before. Now it's revealed, and if I can bet there are hundreds, if not thousands, of hackers looking at it, trying to find flaws in it. And the reason is there's a lot of money to be made there, right?
Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. If he was able to crack through this, peel back that curtain, that's not to say that other people have not done it previously, but just simply regarded that information as way too valuable to share with anybody. So if it exposes another layer to let the good hackers look for vulnerabilities that Apple hasn't found yet, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But it's nothing for anybody to worry about as yet, but it's certainly a landmark data point.
This is what Zerub, the checker, says. By the way, the secure enclave is where Touch ID goes. It's where passwords are stored. It's where all the secret stuff is stored in a secure enclave so that it's separate from the rest of the operating system.
Right. It's not the your secret stuff that could be compromised. It's the code that Apple put together to keep the stuff secret that could have been exposed.
Right.
Which means that if there is a problem in there that can be exploited, now it's one step easier for someone to find that problem.
Here's what Zurb says. The fact that the SCP was hidden behind a key worries me. Is Apple not confident enough to push the secure enclave decrypted as they did with kernels past iOS 10?
Yeah, so that's a false equivalency. The reason they decrypted it was a performance enhancement. They found out that the act of decrypting it was doing just enough to slow down the process as they wanted. If they left it decrypted, they thought there was no threat to user data because it didn't touch any user data, and it was an advantage to performance. So for them, it was a net win. Where this, again, is that defense in depth. I mean, Paradise Island has that cloaking device. And if you get through that cloaking device, you still got to fight the Amazons and you know, bust into the castle. But that cloaking device stops you from even having to do that. And this is the same way you might have a gate before you get to the alarm, before you get to the front door, before you get to all these other things.
Right.
It was just one more layer of protection.
So now people will be analyzing the firmware, trying to find holes in it. Zurb says, I think public scrutiny will add to the security of the secure enclave in the long run because people will be analyzing it and trying to find holes. And as they do, and, you know, I have to point out, it's rare the piece of software that doesn't have flaws, they can be patched and fixed unless... And this is the reason there'll be a gold rush trying to break this stuff down. The hacker sells it to the NSA or the CIA or to the mafia or somebody who doesn't want to disclose it but instead wants to use it. And that's the real risk. This is why Apple's bug bounty program is so important and really, frankly, why they should be spending more money, not less. They are not coming even close to, with $100,000 to the millions of dollars that a bad actor will pay or a government will pay for these flaws.
Yeah, also not just paying for those flaws, but also paying for the secrecy of these flaws. Because remember that if there's a vending machine somewhere on campus that will give you three Cokes for $1 instead of one Coke for a dollar, you don't want to tell anybody that exists or else they'll fix that machine. So whenever you get a security problem with a device, that's your... If my job is to get into people's phones, I want to keep that flaw intact. So I don't want to sell it to anybody. I don't want to give it away to anybody. I certainly don't want to claim essentially a Tesla-esque sticker price for it because I could... That's giving away my ability to charge people $300,000 a shot to get into things and not have to tell anybody how I was doing it. So it's a very, very serious problem. But I tend to think that the... more people know about this flaw, the greater the chance that one of the good hackers is going to expose it in such a way that either people are warned the hell off of trusting this or the manufacturer is in a position to really not only fix it, but also make sure it's damn fixed and make sure everybody knows it's fixed.
The article in Tech Republic goes on to say that Apple has no intention of fixing this. That would be a big deal for Apple to do because they would have to... change the encryption key in all. It just is not going to happen. They'll do a different key in next generation iPhones. I'm sure
they'll have a next generation setup. I wasn't a big fan of Tech Republic's article on this. I thought they fixed it. They kept fixing it throughout the day, but it kind of veered towards the wrong story for most of it.
It's accurate now, which is the secure enclave processor handles password, touch ID encryption, and decryption. Yep. It doesn't release any user data or information at all.
Yep.
But it does give bad guys the opportunity now to start looking at how the secure enclave processor works and perhaps find holes in it. But as of right now, we don't know of any holes that have been.
Yeah, and Apple keeps patching this stuff, and there'll be a secure enclave 2 or 3 or whatever number they're on next. I mean, it's a cat and mouse game.
Would government use this? Could it be a value to the government to get into your phone, for instance, to unlock a locked iPhone?
I mean, usually you need multiple exploits now, right? Like you need what gets you on the device. You need what escalates your privilege. You need what releases the right now it's a token. It releases a yes or no token if you're authenticated. It's a bunch of stuff they need to do.
My understanding is that this alone wouldn't do it. The greatest use you could get would be to use the information inside the secure enclave to create a ghost device that could pretend to be authentication, but there are other techniques that would be way, way easier than that as far as my knowledge of this system goes.
It's too late now, but if you found a hidden Apple page you could get a job. This Apple page was hidden in on a web page. Where was it hidden?
That's just
neat. It wasn't really hidden. It was just if you run any utility that basically does web traces, that basically says here are the URLs that are being requested from the software that's on your machine. There are a lot of machines that Apple uses for iCloud for basically all of its services. And so if you just say, oh, I wonder what blah, 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 blob for dot Apple dot whatever.
Oh, how
just,
funny.
Let's cut that out. Let's paste it into let's open that URL. And that's literally the front page. So it's not like this wasn't Matthew Broderick getting into C-Tech astronomy or anything like that. It was pretty easy.
It's pretty cute. Cool. The guy who discovered it, Zach Whitaker, used a tool called Burp Suite, a traffic analyzer, to intercept data between several iPhone apps to see what kind of personal data was being sent along to advertisers. That's something that's widely done with Wireshark and other analyzers as well. Among the stream of connections to analytics sites and advertisers used to track a user's app consumption, there were several outbound connections to an Apple server, which the company uses to host iCloud data, such as customers' photos and videos. And he was just smart enough to say, I wonder what this useast1.blobstore.apple.com points to. And it pointed to an ASCII page with a job offer. Hey there, you found us. We're looking for a talented engineer to develop a critical infrastructure component that is to be a key part of the Apple ecosystem. How critical? Data capacity, exabytes. Servers, tens of thousands. Disks, millions. So it's a network engineer.
More data than you can imagine.
Wow, I think that's actually really clever. I wonder how many companies are doing things like that. You know?
No, like, I just think it's great.
Yeah.
It's like the last Starfighter. Like, greetings, Starfighter. Then Robert Preston shows up, takes you to the spaceship, literally.
Yeah.
And I love it that it has this ASCII Apple. And by the way, mostly the letters are M's, capital M.
So good.
Isn't that funny? That is really cool. What do you make anything of that job listing? Does it mean anything particular to either of you?
No, could mean anything.
Network engineer.
Yeah, good people. Hire them.
High level network architect really might be more. Right. Instead, it was just a lousy old journalist.
Did you see Will's traffic story about AccuWeather along the lines of packet sniffing?
No.
So AccuWeather is a weather app, and Will's traffic, he was chronic. He was a jailbreaker, and now he's doing a lot of security analysis for apps. And he found that AccuWeather was sending your location data to a data vending company every few hours.
Are we surprised? Come on, this is a free program. Are you surprised? And what
it's disclosure.
Yeah, they should probably say, but I'm sure somewhere it says your location's being shared, right? Oh, even when location sharing is off.
Yeah. That was the rub.
Oh, never mind. Yeah, you probably shouldn't do that.
Yes.
But I mean, come on. I mean, we know that most of the free apps leak some sort of information about you.
Well, he's got a whole program now where he keeps analyzing apps for this kind of stuff and reporting. And then at least you can make an informed decision. If AccuWeather is valuable enough for you that you don't care, or if you do care, you can pick another weather app.
Where is that page?
It's a program. I'll find it for you, but it's a service that he set up that just keeps scanning apps for example, bad SSL.
What's Will's hacker name again?
@Chronic on Twitter.
@Chronic.
Verify.ly.
Verify.ly. Oh.
@ly. Yeah.
I know that page. Verify.ly or
.ly. Yeah. It's verify.ly. There's not much up there right now.
Okay.
But he's doing a lot of good.
Okay. Allows you to scan the binary code of an iOS application to produce a human-readable report. Oh, this looks good.
Yeah.
Report detailing all detected common security issues and the breakdown. So would you have to jailbreak to use this?
He was providing a lot of information from it, but I'm not sure what his actual model is for this yet. Yeah.
Huh. Well, let's see what the pricing is.
Yeah.
If you have to ask, you can't afford it pricing. No, it's $100 a month.
Yeah. But I don't think this is end user facing stuff. I think this is more.
Yeah. Well, that's a good. Thank you for that.
It's a good service.
Yeah. And I did not know.
He's very good. If you follow him on Twitter, he's not sensational at all. A lot of times the security stories come out and he says, no, stop, panic. There's no relationship between these things.
How do you spell his handle?
Chronic. Chronic.
Oh. accurately.
Yeah.
There he is. And he just published an article called 76 Popular Apps Confirmed Vulnerable to Silent Interception of TLS Protected Data. Yikes.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. It's great to get like a lot of attention to this kind of thing.
Following him. And then I always love it when you follow somebody like that. You always get some great suggestions for other people that might be handy to follow.
Stephen Esser is the opposite. He's also brilliant, but he is so pessimistic.
He's gloomy.
He's like, oh, the SEP is, you know, we don't know. Now maybe they got the whole thing. The world is ending.
Oh, my God. It's all over. Yeah. It's all over. Yeah. All right. This is good stuff. Good stuff.
The InfoSec world is amazing.
I know. I love it. I'm sorry. I was just reading it. AirPods. Good news. Did you want some? Well, now you're only 2 to 3 weeks out from your very own. This is it. This has really been an amazing story. And I don't know if the credit goes to the massive success of AirPods. I don't see a lot of people walking around with them. Or just for the incredible difficulty in manufacturing them.
Some vendors have them in stock right now.
I think it's reject rate. I think that it's a really hard problem to get that battery fitting inside there, and also making sure that when it's heated up and constructed again, it doesn't, you know, pull apart or doesn't create any problems.
Well, credit to Apple for testing the hell out of it. Any other company would have just shipped them all and let the users test them.
I think coming right on the heels of the Note 7 ignition problem, when you say, oh, by the way, we have a lithium battery you can put actually inside your ear canal with insert it into the thermal exhaust port leading to the core of the reactor, so to speak, I think that that's a good reason to be super careful. But I believe it to be a question of yields as opposed to strictly being able to turn out as many as they possibly can. But so it's amazing.
It's a hard product to make, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing that this thing is almost a year old and it's still not walk them to store, pick it up, and get it next day. So I'm sure that various people inside Apple are having kittens over this even still.
Hey, by the way, thanks to Compy in our chat room who says, this is nothing new, burying want ads in secret parts of web pages. The Guardian did it in 2015 with a JavaScript-based job ad buried on its page. It's ASCII art as well. I guess that's the thing to do. And this article says that Flickr and Uber have also, as well as Google, have also done this, hiding job listings in their, here's the New York Times and Pinterest, have a hidden message for developers. This is cool. And I guess the thing is, you got to do it ASCII or it's no good, right?
Well, I don't think that Java.js files support emoji yet.
HipChat has done it. Mozilla, eBay, Pinterest.
Why not? It's fantastic.
I think it's a great idea. If somebody's, first of all, if you're looking for work and you have some tech skills, I would start looking everywhere for hidden messages.
Yeah.
What a great way to get a job.
I found your message.
Oh, you're hired. You're hired, my friend. So thank you, Compy, for passing that along. And I love my AirPods. I'm very happy with them. I use them all the time.
Yeah, it's not the sound, because a lot of people still bristle at the idea of paying that much for sound, it's getting the sensors and the accelerometer and the chipsets in there. And there's a ton of electronics in those things.
Yeah, they don't sound bad. They're not bad.
But the breakthrough there is not the sound. The breakthrough there is getting all that stuff stuffed into a tiny little earring.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've already talked about the HomePod firmware.
Yeah, the gift that keeps giving.
Now the setup process has become obvious. This isn't directly germane, but you know, with the HomePod coming along, I think we've talked before about how this must be scary for Sonos. Sonos did something strange to me, and I bet it did it to you the other day. Mm-hmm. It gave me new privacy settings.
Yep.
In preparation for an update to come. And apparently their new privacy policy, it says if you don't accept it, your device may not function in the future. The speculation is that maybe they're getting ready to put speech in there.
Yeah, it's always, I mean, I've never been terribly worried about Sonos, because all they have to do is just make one car trip up to Amazon headquarters or one car trip up to Google headquarters and put them both against each other, saying we're thinking about putting either Scala or putting in Google Assistant into every single Sonos product. What can you do for us? And they solve that problem. Not only do they solve that problem, there's an argument to be made they could leapfrog Apple, maybe not for the audio quality, but certainly from the smart assistant quality.
So they don't say you have to agree to it or we're going to turn you off. They just say you won't be able to get further updates, and that means that you'll probably get decreasing functionality over time. But, and by the way, I spent so much on Sonos that...
I know, me too.
I'm handcuffed. What am I going to do? Say no, but I don't want...
Do you think
want...
they'd license it, Leo, or do you think they'd roll their own? I think they'd probably license it at this point, like Google Assistant or Scala.
If they really want to be competitive, I cannot imagine that Amazon or Google would not be ecstatic to simply have a big problem solved. That is to say that we will continue to make the $129 little kitchen speaker, but if someone wants the full symphonic effect, by all means, go to our partner at Sonos, who has the latest version of the assistant or the latest version of our voice assistant. I don't see that as a problem. I would be surprised if there wasn't some sort of red binder already on the shelf ready to be pulled down when it feels like it's the right time to execute that plan.
Sonos says users, quote, can opt out of submitting certain types of personal information to the company, for instance additional usage data such as performance and activity information. We've seen, by the way, this issue before, most recently with Microsoft Windows 10, where if you want to use Cortana, you have to agree to give up a lot of stuff, mostly because everything you say to Cortana has to be sent back to the home office for analysis, and I'm sure that's the same.
Interesting too, because they don't have a mic as far as an owner of their speaker. So would they use your smartphone as a mic?
They do have a mic, but I don't think they could use it for this. Many Sonos speakers will adjust, right? They have, I can't remember what they call it, but they'll adjust their sound for the room.
That's true.
Acoustics, right? You have to have a mic to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's a mic in some, at least. But I think I remember when they put it in there, everybody said, oh, there's a mic in the new Sonos speakers. Are you going to have speech assistant? And they said, no, it's just for the adjusting. But maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. That I would expect them to have an extra accessory you plug into the network to make it work. Because think about exactly how sophisticated the antenna array is even on the Echo. And think about how sophisticated the pickups are on the HomePod. It's not as – realize that the reason why voice assistants tend to fail is not always because of the intelligence. It's because there is not a microphone that is pointed directly at wherever that command is coming from that the device can then hone in on to make sure that it's getting that voice accurately. So
Sonos says in order for us to provide the functions we will or do provide, I guess the future functions, you'll need to give us your email address, your IP address, your account login information, device data, information about Wi-Fi antennas and other hardware information, room names and error data. That all makes sense. They say we're not going to look at your library and see what you're listening to.
Yeah, but it's still valuable information. Just the simple fact that I have labeled a random collection of speakers as living room and a second as master bedroom and a third as the kids room, that in itself is a lot of information, particularly when you think about how much it also contains, how much money I've spent on speakers in each one of those three rooms. I wish I could even tell myself whether or not this is something to get annoyed about or something that's not a big deal. On one level, it is not a big deal, because if they want to continue to add services, they're going to have to be able to connect you to those services without having to make you click through another agreement every single time they add another service like this. On the other hand, again, this is definitely valuable information for them to have. And if they are barring a federal law defining my personal information as something that I owned and I simply licensed to companies like Sonos for my benefit, and I can restrict or rescind that license at any time, there's absolutely no reason why Sonos would take a look at this big bag of money on the table labeled sell Andy's personal information to a tire company and say, well, it's legal for us to do it. We have the data. We have his agreement. We can sell to anybody. Why would we not pick up this big bag of money on the table?
Funny.
Plex, by the way, is doing a similar thing. They updated their terms of service, essentially saying that we previously we said that we're not looking, we don't have any information on you that we're keeping. Now we're saying that we do have, we are going to be keeping information about you. That the phrasing of it suggests that it's not like they're going to market your information. It's more like they're going to add new services like live TV, like they're going to add new services that again require access, that sort of thing. But once again, every time you give something up, you're not getting something back for it, and that's a cause for concern.
Analysts Piper Jaffray surveyed teens and found, wow, a big change between spring 2016 and spring 2017. In the year intervening, 76% now of teens have their own phone, and it's an iPhone, and 81% expect their next phone to be an iPhone. That is huge domination of a very important market segment for people who, you know, are following along. You want to get those teens hooked on your iPhones early because that means a lifetime of phone buying. Giuseppe Stuto, who is the CEO of Fam Smack High and UX Junkie, I don't know, says that's a good news for iMessage, and it makes sense. I mean, we talk all the time about market share for WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, but really, if you have 76% of all the teens and they're all using iMessage, that's the dominant messaging platform. Forget those other guys, at least in the U.S.
And now they're putting Apple Pay into it, and they're increasing the value of just being inside that ecosystem.
And it's also one of the reasons so many teens use it, because if you don't use iMessage, if you're on Android, you're left out. You can get text messages, but you don't get the group messaging. You don't get all the fun.
You don't get the laser screen.
You don't get lasers.
Boom, 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 boom.
and I presume wouldn't get paid.
You'd use it. Well, they have third-party integrations, so like Venmo and things like that. But the built-in stuff is always nice. The more you can increase the value, I mean, it's an old game plan, and WeChat has mastered this to beyond anyone else's art and science. But the more you can create value in the communications layer, the more that becomes the platform for people.
Yeah, iMessage doing okay.
Although I have to point out, centennials actually spell it IIIIIPHOOOOOOOOONE when they ask their parents to buy them one.
Really?
No, well, that's, you see that, like, the texting is now iPhone, me.
Well, kid, you know, it's funny because I noticed this when my kids were teenagers. They always would add a vowel. They go, dad, duh.
Yeah.
And
exasperation.
Dad, duh. And I think that this is just that turned into text. Yeah. iPhone.
Yes. iPhone,
dad,
buy it.
iPhone, daddy.
It's like those people on Twitter who every Christmas they retweet people who are angry they only got a car and an iPhone for gifts.
So it was 69% November 2016, April 2017, 76%. That is massive growth. Massive growth. I we were talking about this on iOS today. I said, really, that's kind of surprising given how expensive the iPhone is. But Megan reminded me, there are a lot, you know, there's hand-me-downs.
Yeah, a lot of hand-me-downs.
There's the SE. In fact, I just got an offer from AT&T for a free SE if I signed up for 2 years. So there are ways to get cheap or free iPhones.
But you see a lot of older people, like people who are using, at least I still see out and about people using iPhone 5, iPhone 5S that they got from their parent or their older sibling or their, you know, whoever.
And iMessage works just as well on that.
And they've got good build quality, and they generally, I mean, there are problems that pop up, of course, but they generally seem to last for several years, and they get updates for several years.
Right. Anything else we should mention here? I'm just looking real quickly. Apple says they're going to spend $1 billion. We already talked about that on Hollywood programming. Netflix topped that. Netflix announced they were going to spend $7 billion.
Can I just make a plea right now to Netflix? Please adopt Core ML, because the recommendations I'm getting from you lately, they make me super sad. And I think if you could do some Renee likes, Renee doesn't like, Renee doesn't like, Renee likes, Renee likes, you could give me, like Thrifter for Netflix, you could give me much better results.
You see, I bet what you're not doing, you're not rating every movie after you watch it.
But it still says 97%. 97% rating for you. And I look at it and I say, I would never.
Wrong. Yeah.
I have never watched anything like you, sir, and I would never watch anything like you,
ma'am. No, it's completely wrong. But you gotta rate your movies on Netflix if you want better recommendations.
You see, like, I watch a lot of terrible. This is the thing, Leo, is that there are movies that I think are brilliant that I don't like, and movies that I know are horrible and I just love. So, like, I'll watch
You're confusing it.
Well, I'll watch that Schwarzenegger sheriff movie when he's retiring for the ninth time, or I'll watch that Steven Seagal thing when he's clearly got a squirrel on his head.
No taste.
I know, but yeah. It's like, it's fun to watch, and I want to tune out. But then I'll see like a brilliant Merchant Ivory movie, and I'll just say, not for me. I can't take a third Queen's Guard in this sequence.
Yeah.
So it's a tough problem. You're to crack. Tough.
Anything to say about, we got beta 6 in the public beta of iOS 11, and the developers got beta 7. Seems like the pace, the cadence has sped up. That anything to say? Is it bug fixes at this point? Do we get any new features in beta 6?
They've been making a lot of adjustments. Like they famously, they stopped the X behavior on the cards in the scene view. Sorry, the fast app switcher on iPad. They've added the swipe back to the notifications on iPhone. People were upset that you didn't have those. Yeah. They've added those back. They've tuned a lot of behaviors just based on feedback. To work at, like, a lot of these are discussions, and a lot of them don't have clear winners. It's people who have opinions on both sides, and getting feedback from tens of thousands of people helps you hone in on the better approach.
And it also shows you the stuff that's now at the bottom of the list that they have time to get to now. So it's a good sign that we're really close.
Well, here's another sign. Apple has put up, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Renee, videos on how to use iOS 11.
Yep.
Which is kind of unprecedented. I mean, I don't remember them doing this before with a version of iOS that isn't out yet.
I would be breaking NDA if I'd done this in previous years.
Yeah, right. They said you couldn't do it.
Certainly not while I was writing books on this stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
They could even send me a working version of a feature under NDA while I was writing books on this stuff.
Here's how to use the dock. Apparently it involves lightning.
How to harness the power of the amazing new dock.
Must have shot that during winter.
Static. Your hands are Tesla coils.
iOS 11.
You need a candle.
Look familiar, Renee?
Okay, for starters, you can customize your dock with even more of your favorite apps by just dragging them in.
By the way, this voice sounds very young.
If you want to open a recent file,
like,
just touch and hold an app.
Like
and
a teenager.
Yo.
Show more, show less.
Which tells you something. That's the market Apple would love to get.
Spring-loaded.
They want all these kids to buy these for their school laptop, right?
And drop. And that's how to harness the power of the amazing new dock.
Sounds like Emma Stone a little bit. Actually, for all I know, it really is. Apple certainly has the money to afford that.
They had Lake Bell for a while. I like those commercials.
Yeah. Here's how to easily manage your files and folders with the new File app. I have to open these in a separate page for some reason on my
browser. How
to
manage and fly through your files using the new
Files app. So she's in a wind tunnel with smoke trails.
What you'll need. iOS 11 and an iPad.
With
iOS 11, your stuff is all in one place.
Definitely aiming at kids in
this.
Just
open up the Files app. Now you can manage your most recent files and folders. Or you can browse through all your files and folders.
Oh!
You can even make and manage favorites.
Donuts.
Drag and drop files.
Is there anything they can't do?
And search your files from a bunch of different
places. See, I know we're supposed to be focusing on the tutorial, but all I can think about is
that donut.
How much money they spent making 100 donuts, selecting 3 that were okay, and then how complicated that move of hand goes in, lifts up donut, hand enters the frame again, and there's a bite taken out of it. If they didn't spend like 1/6 the amount of money that Pixar spends on an entire feature just on that move,
it turned out Craig had the perfect bite after all the donuts. It was the one that Craig had just picked up when he wasn't supposed to.
But you know, it's a contractor, somebody like Alex Lindsay doing it. It's not, you know. All right, here's one that involves a Rubik's Cube and chopsticks.
Things done more quickly with multitasking.
Oh, there you go.
Ooh, he caught the fly with a chopstick like Mr.
Daniel-san.
Miyagi, right?
Say you're putting together a keynote presentation.
So that's aimed at my generation.
Just swipe up to open the dock. Then
I don't think any teenagers remember the Karate Kid, or do they?
There it is on your screen.
Oh yeah, now the horrible new Will Smith version. Not Will Smith. Jaden.
Windows are live.
Did Jaden Smith have a chopstick fly scene?
Logo design.
Probably not.
Everything's so primitive.
Wow.
And that's that.
And he solved the Rubik's Cube with his left hand.
With multitasking.
That's actually pretty cool.
Good job, hands.
There was 3 of them.
Oh, that's confusing as hell.
Three-armed man. My wife was killed by a three-armed man.
You know, though, I now understand what the donut and this chopstick. You go to the next video to find out what prop they use in the next video, don't you? That's the whole point of that.
How to effortlessly salami. Scan, sign, and send a document.
So they're making the pencil float. Wow.
Apple Pencil and an iPad Pro.
That was cool.
With iOS 11.
And three 11. Hands.
And cafe.
And
this is super simple.
Cafe.
First, Black cafe. Open up Notes.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's buffering.
Start by tapping the plus button.
Also notice we're seeing diversity in the hands as
Select
well.
Yes.
Scan documents.
And diversity. It's the new diversity in Silicon Valley.
Well, at least the hand models are African American.
Okay. You're all set to sign. But first,
all right,
not so much in the
coffee ring. Who painted the coffee ring? And how many times did they have to paint the coffee ring to be perfect, right? Look at that. Oh, perfect coffee ring.
Perfect.
No, not just that, but they had to get approvals on that ring.
Do you think? I bet you're right.
Oh, I'm sure.
Johnny signed off on it.
Yeah. Well, it's not exactly the ring I was imagining.
And whoosh.
Whoosh.
Be more ring.
Effortlessly scan, sign, and send a document.
Wow.
See, that's it. You got to get the magnets in the right place for the hover mode.
You were right. So there's quite a few of these. How to mark up stuff, yep. How to get around with multi-touch. Mm.
But not only that, but they're short enough that even if people don't use those features, they're aware that these features exist. And that's kind of like what we were discussing earlier about how it's difficult when you have a touch operating system that has features that aren't behind a button or behind a menu or something like that. You have to be taught that you can drag stuff off of a window tile and into the dock icon and then drag it back into someplace else. Again, these are things that people are probably might not figure out on their own. I mean, I myself, in the share sheet and in just the regular iOS, it took me a long time to realize that I don't have to keep if I want to share something to Dropbox, I don't have to keep scroll sideways to reveal the Dropbox icon. I could just press and hold it and then drag it to the number one position. It took me a shockingly long time to figure that out because there wasn't an obvious pip or an obvious guide on the screen to show me that, oh, by the way, if you press and hold on something, it does something. So even if this isn't really teaching people how to do something, use a feature they're actually going to use, it's going to show them that this feature at least exists and they might remember it later on.
You know, if they were smart, they'd put those in Snapchat, buy some Snapchat ads. That's where the teens are, right? Or Instagram.
Or they're on Instagram now. Yeah.
I bet they are. Actually, I've seen Apple ads, I think, in Instagram. The reason I think in Snapchat is I just read that NBC News, which I didn't know this, they have a special news show just for Snapchat. They're a couple-minute-long news updates a couple of times a day. 29 million viewers in the first month. Well, 29. And this isn't even the premier platform anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If that's...
And I'm glad that they're not wearing T-shirts. I don't know why that annoys the hell out of me. That there's I saw a demo... I don't know if you call it a beta, but sort of a test show of this company that was bought out by a huge company, media company, for $12, $13 million. And so here's some of the things we're working on our new news show. And it is, again, your basic scrawny guy who could be 22, could be 41, in a T-shirt, unshaven, with this very, very self-consciously homemade like news map behind him, saying, "Oh, just don't pretend you're not a $14 million company. You could go to Amazon. You could buy a map of the world and hang it behind you if you wanted to. You could shave and you could put on a halfway decent shirt if you wanted to. Don't pretend that you're just a bunch of exciting kids making your way in the big city trying to reinvent the platform. You're not. Come on.
How's your power situation there, Renee?
It's been going on and off, but I think I'm good.
Well, you know what?
It's back on right now.
Okay, I'm just nervous. So I tell you what, we'll wrap this up and get your pick of the week here so that we don't have the embarrassing darkness hit your screen.
Montreal has gone dark.
Actually, we were talking about where your teens can get their inexpensive iPhones so they can be like every other teen.
Mm-hmm.
Gazelle, of course, mm-hmm. gazelle.com. For trade-ins, you go to gazelle.com, find your device, and get an instant quote. It's a great place to sell your old devices. Shipping is free. Payment is fast. By the way, you can trade in your Pixel or your Galaxy S8 phone. Why do they say that? Because here comes the Pixel 2 and the Galaxy Note 8. this is I love it because if you're somebody like me who wants the latest and greatest, it's really nice to be able to sell that old phone and kind of subsidize the purchase of the new phone. It's also a great place for parents to get an iPhone for their teens or for you to get a great deal on a phone. Gazelle has an incredible selection of quality pre-owned phones and other devices at great prices. iPhone 5, 6, 7, even the 7 Plus, iPad Airs, Mini, iPad Pros. For laptops, you can take a look at the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro. You can even get an Android phone, a Galaxy phone. They've got a great selection. Every device, when you're buying a pre-owned phone at Gazelle, is fully inspected and backed by a 30-day ironclad return policy. And they're all sold without carrier contracts, so don't worry about another 2 years on your carrier. You get a great, great deal on a great phone without any strings. Go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find out what your old device is worth and check out this selection of pre-owned devices today. And by the way, when you buy at Gazelle, you can also finance on checkout with Affirm. It's very easy. It's part of the checkout process. And you could pay it off at 3, 6, or 12 months. Much better deal, frankly, than getting it from the phone company. Devices available in not just excellent condition, but you can save even more if you're willing to take a good or fair condition. All of them work 100%. They're all put through a 30-point inspection. They work with all the major carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. But, you know, a lot of times it's a replacement phone. You know a new phone's coming out. You're going to want the next iPhone, for instance. You just need to get a few months in. You can get one that's a little bit gentle wear and save even more. Give new life to used electronics, trade them in for cash, or buy certified pre-owned. Our favorite place to go, gazelle.com. It's so funny because I know there's a new, whenever we get the Gazelle ads, I know, oh, there must be a new phone coming because they want to remind you, you can get that new phone and you can subsidize that purchase at gazelle.com by selling the old one. All right, we'll start with Renee so you can get out of here. If the power goes out again. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I appreciate that. So my pick of the week is the Aukey. It's this wonderful little Aukey power adapter. If you still have those old lighter ports in your car, you don't have fancy USB ports like my car. What I like about this one is it sits flush. You just put it in and it's almost invisible that it was anything ever other than USB ports. Now, it is 2.4, which is good for most things. Actually, might have 4.8 on it.
I like this because who uses cigarette lighters anymore, right?
Totally.
This is perfect.
They exist because people made adapters to fit in cigarette lighters. The only reason they exist. And I tweeted out, they were on sale yesterday. They're still on sale today. They were on sale for even less yesterday. And, like Marco Armont and a bunch of other people started telling me how long they'd had it and how much they loved it. So I immediately ordered several extras as stocking stuffers because they're really cheap, for an electronics component. And they're really useful, especially I've had a much more cumbersome version of this in my car for a long time. When I pick people up at the airport, they're thrilled because they can plug their phone in, charge it, because everyone leaves an airport with almost no power left on their phone. Or if I have my godkids in the car, their phones almost always run down and they can quickly plug in. And it makes it useful because it's not just one cord coming out of it. There's two cords and it's not a proprietary cord. It's USB. So you can plug in your iPhone charger. You can plug in micro USB. You can plug in USB-C. Anything to fit your multi-device family, friend, whatever dynamic you have. Again, super cheap, super convenient, and they sit flush so you don't knock them around when you're moving.
And Amazon's doing a thing that they've been doing lately that's kind of strange. So it's $9.99 on Amazon, but then they have the buy one, get 30% off deal.
Yeah.
Usually it says buy two or something, but in this case, buy one or more and you can get 30% off. So I guess it is kind of a big sale. I mean, that means it's going to be like $6. So
yeah.
Buy several. They have them in white and black. And Aukey is, I think, a great company. They make good stuff. I get a lot of Aukey stuff, A-U-K-E-Y.
Yeah, so everyone, don't listen to this. My family, friends, you're all getting these this year.
Yeah, what a great stocking stuffer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you have to get him a car with cigarette lighters.
Well, I mean, a lot of us don't have, our Model 3s have not arrived yet, so we're all still jaunting around in cars that actually do have this legacy technology.
Lisa's car doesn't have a cigarette lighter. My car doesn't have a cigarette lighter.
Well, you both have Teslas, Leader.
No, Lisa has an Audi. It's just, the more recent cars, they've stopped putting those in. What you're seeing more of, which I love, is USB adapters. So that solves that problem, right?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Andy Anatko, your pick of the week, my friend.
Mine is kind of a weird one. It's an iOS simulator of the RPN 65 Hewlett-Packard programmable calculator.
Oh, my God. I want.
It's, yeah, I mean, this is credibly called the first pocket computer. Number one, there's something about a vintage Hewlett-Packard calculator with that, those, like, those Lego-style keys, a real vacuum fluorescent display, the reverse Polish notation. Also, this was a notable calculator because it actually had a magnetic card reader that you just fed cards in from left to right, so you could like write programs, probably for doing boring things like statistics, but also doing like really, really simple games, and just feed it in from a motor would just like suck it in and read in the thing, and you'd have new programs. I like it because I have very, very, very dim memories of my dad having one of these that was bought by his company. He was an engineer, and having it for a couple of years, and my being allowed to use it with his supervision once at the kitchen table, but otherwise it was way too expensive and way too fancy for like 5-year-old Andy to to get his mitts on. But also, it's such a beautiful simulation of an object. It's like it's not almost like it. I don't like these like fake calculators where and we chose a font that is sans serif and it's got segments in it, so it looks just, and because we colored it red, it looks like an LED. No, it doesn't look like an LED. It looks like an LED PostScript font. This looks exactly like those old like vacuum displays that were in old HP calculators. And so it's really a lot. It was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. I bought it because $4 and I wanted something to play with. But then you find yourself, well, how do you write programs in this? And so you're writing programs for this thing. And you can also it also has every single one of those HP program cards that was available commercially.
Oh, no. So really? Yes. What a great deal.
And when you load one in, it doesn't just simply like load in the program. It does the animation of the card sliding from left to right through the card reader. It doesn't make the noise of the motor. That's the only thing it's missing. But it's just such a completely satisfying experience to use this as a desktop calculator. Of course, it sent me then to eBay to find out how much these things cost on the secondary market for the real things, and decided that I don't think I want to spend $200, $300 for a nostalgic old calculator. But this is for $4 that I'm definitely in. It's a lot of fun for what you get.
And it's RPN, right? So you have to enter.
Yep.
What you enter the number one,
enter 8 divided
enter,
by
enter, and then yeah, and enter, and then do the operation, and then wow, and the look at this, the paper tape, this is so implemented.
It was a system you could plug it into a dock that had a paper tape printer, and yeah, it was quite the scene, man.
Personal investment day of the week, mean standard, great circle navigation. Oh, this is, you got it. You just got it. You just,
yeah.
And these are all free once you pay the $3.99.
Yep.
But this is thousands of dollars worth of stuff.
And I'm a big, another phrase that I tend to come back to. One of my favorite things in this world is something that is desperately foolish, but executed at a very, very high level. And so it's like if you're just going to do, hey, I put my old calculator on the bed of my scanner and map keys on top of them. OK, that's lame. But if you're going to say, no, I'm going to make this a perfect and flawless simulation of this device, almost if an iPad had Force Touch, it would even replicate that wonderful key sense of an HP old calculator. So
look at this. It's got all the registers. Oh, yep. What kind of programs do you write in this?
It's an 8. I had to look it up. There are still people writing. There are resources online, but it's basically a calculator programming language that HP set up. It is not really intuitive. It's a little bit like assembler language. It's more like it's almost like a keylogger, really, where it's you're running a keyboard macro and playing it back, but having to set it up inside your head of how to create registers and how to
choose from a vintage classic HP 65 or a modern one, because that increases the speed and the accuracy. You get more registers with the modern one, which of course doesn't exist. Oh my gosh, look at this. All the features you get, you can add on, or you can say, no, no, I want it to be as slow and cumbersome as the original HP 65. This is, you're right, Andy. This is a work of art. This is fantastic. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's also preserving history. The stuff that archive.org also does to make sure that old games and old Mac software are run on web-based emulators. It would have been such a horrible thing if all this wonderful work that those engineers did and also those designers did back in the 70s were to disappear because it's just not a useful object and there are going to be fewer and fewer of these things that actually work. Man. And the ones that do work, they're going to be like the 18th century mechanized street organs that used to be on every street corner, but now they're only 9 in the world that still work, and so they're in a museum. And maybe once every 10 years, PBS will do a documentary, and they'll take it out behind the glass and actually fire it up and make it work. With this, you can actually play with it and see what these things were like. I'm with you. I turned off everything that made it modern in the settings because it's kind of fun to see a calculator that has to spend a third of a second thinking about a calculation, you know, where the display has to blank out for a second because it just doesn't have enough power to refresh the display if it doesn't have a number to display yet. It's cool.
Go to the website cuveqvsoft.ch. They're Swiss because apparently they've got a HP Jones because they also make the RPN 97 Pro, which is a desktop calculator. Oh, my God. These guys are insane. This is his, they have a variety. The 45, the 30. Look at the 35. The first scientific calculator from 1972. Yeah, clearly this, and I bet you it's this one guy. I'm pretty sure. That's amazing. That is amazing. Look at that. And they're all very affordable. Good pick, Andy. You got me all excited. Love it. I want to show you my new camera bag. This is from a company that I like a lot called Think Tank, and they make a bunch of great camera bags. I've been using what they call the Retrospective 5 for a long time, but I wanted a little more room, so I just upgraded the Retrospective 7. A couple of reasons I like these camera bags. First of all, it doesn't look like a camera bag. It looks kind of like a beat-up old canvas bag, so you're less likely to get robbed. But, man, it has all the compartments you need, including, this is the 7, enough room for a 10-inch tablet or a MacBook to carry that along with your camera. Because basically, I don't check my camera, obviously, when I fly. So I need a bag that can hold my camera. But if that's my bag, then I need to have enough room to put other stuff in it. This is fantastic. All the padded dividers, you know, for lenses and so forth. Plus a lot of pouches and spaces. Here, show me the top-down view, if you can, for stuff. One of the things I really like about it in this outside pouch, it also has a cover that you could put over it in case it gets wet, rainy. But it is waxed canvas, so it's going to be pretty water-resistant. But if it really starts to downpour, you could protect your valuable gear with that. It comes with, at least if you order it from the Think Tank site right now, it comes with a little bonus. Where did I put that? Memory and a card holder and a battery card holder. It has really loud Velcro, so if somebody's sneaking up behind you, first of all, they can't easily lift the flap, and they're going to let you know. But there are times, maybe you're a wedding photographer or you're a street shooter, you don't want that noise. This is the sound silencer. It covers up the Velcro, so then it's just a quiet and easy flap, so you don't have to make all that noise when you want to access your camera. It's got a handle and a very comfortable carrying strap, and it's about $160. It's not very expensive. This is the Retrospective 7, but everything Think Tank makes, if you ask me, are really good camera bags. I had the little one, which is even less conspicuous, but I have a few more lenses I want to carry with me on my next trip, so I needed something a little bit bigger. I'm a big fan of the Think Tank bags. Not expensive. They do have some leather ones if you want to get a little more fancy, but I like the – this looks like an Army surplus – like gas mask bag. So nobody's going to think your expensive camera is in there. They have other colors as well. I chose the khaki because it makes it look more like Army surplus. Ladies and gentlemen, the power went out, but Renee just like the Energizer Bunny, just kept on kicking.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Can't stop the Energizer Bunny. Thank you, Renee Ritchie, for
thank you
gracing us, as always, with your brains and your beauty. imore.com if you want to read Renee's writing. He's got a lot of good podcasts there. Yeah. Anything else you want to plug?
No, that's it. I mean, we're ramping up for September event and iOS 11 and High Sierra. So we're going to have all the help and how-to articles and all the coverage. And it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Very, I love this time.
Very excited. So see, yeah. So will High Sierra come out? Probably will when Apple does its event. That'll be part of the announcement.
Yeah, I mean, they used to stagger it by a few weeks, but then you'd have features like continuity would be on the iPhone right. and not on the the Mac yet. And it was awkward. So recently they've been tightening that gap a lot.
And I think it's ready. Based on the
we panic, like Craig will go up on stage and he'll say, and we're releasing it today, and we're like, no.
Annie Inako is at the Chicago Sun-Times, CWOB.com, and also a regular on this show, and we're always thrilled to have you as well, my friend.
Always good to have a chance to exercise my vocal abilities with a real human being face to face at least once a week.
Once a week, that's all. And incidentally, let us know, either one of you, if you get an invitation to anything Apple's doing in the next few weeks. And Andy, we'd love you to come out and be our guests if they do have an event.
I can make that work.
Yeah. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday right after iOS Today. Actually, you should start your day a little earlier so you get iOS Today and then Mac Break Weekly. We decided to put the two together because, well, that just makes sense, doesn't it? So Megan Maroney and I talk about iOS, and then here on Mac Break Weekly, we talk about all of the Apple stories. Every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. And as I said, come by a couple hours earlier, and you can watch iOS Today. If you want to be in the studio, I had some great members of the studio audience visiting us from Calgary in Canada, Alberta. Ooh. Yay, right?
Yep.
Maple Leaf forever, rah, rah, rah.
And Mounties.
Mounties. No, I don't think they're, you guys aren't Mounties, are you? Anyway, nice to have you. If you want to be in studio, we do ask you email tickets at twit.tv. Lately, a lot of people, I think it's because it's summertime, have been coming by and saying, oh, I don't want to watch a show. I just want a tour of the studio. And I just want to reiterate, we don't have the staff is all doing something. There's no one person sitting there waiting for you to come by so they can give you a tour. So if you come by, that's fine. It'd be better if you email. I mean, we can accommodate people who just drop in, but it's a lot better if you email tickets at twit.tv so we can make sure that we're prepared for you. And if you just want a quick tour of the studio, you may be disappointed unless I'm not doing anything or somebody's, you know, got some free time because we can't. It happens from time to time that people just don't have the time. They're busy. Everybody who's here is working hard getting those shows out for you. So do email tickets at twit.tv and let us know. You can subscribe to the show and get it on demand and get it downloaded to your device anytime you want. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/MBW. We have audio and video versions available there for direct download or streaming. But if you subscribe on your favorite podcatcher, you'll be sure to get every episode the minute it's available, fresh, hot, off the presses. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time. Security Now coming up next. But now I'm afraid, my friends, it's time to go back to work because Mac Break is over. Bye-bye.